Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Callum Stoneman and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly programme looking at anything and everything related to technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. It's your programme, so if you want to get in touch, if you've got anything you want to share with us, you're more than welcome to drop us an email or attach a voice message to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be finding out about Athena AD, a new tool which uses AI to help blind and partially sighted people create audio description tracks for their videos. Brian Hartgen will be joining us to talk all things Leesy and its latest updates. And following our conversation last week about the Mavis smart glasses, we'll be speaking to Carl, who has been using them for a while, and we'll be finding out his thoughts and how he's been using them. We've got a full house again this week. Hubert Pavelkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran all back with us. Let's see what's grabbing everyone's attention this week. Hubert, what's on your tech radar?
Remote Incident Manager is what's on my radar. At least I'm hoping I got the abbreviation correct. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because the company that develops it is now creating a mobile app for Remote Incident Manager for both iOS and Android. And I think that's fantastic. It is absolutely brilliant. And I'm really liking this. So the way it currently works, it's still in the testing phase. There is a test flight beta available for iOS, which you can sign up for. I don't know if they have a limit on testers, but if you would like to test a Remote Incident Manager on the iPhone, you can submit a form. And it's not too difficult. You just put your name, your email, your Apple ID email, and also which devices you're using and which Bluetooth keyboards you'll be using to test this as well, which was a bit of a surprise, but hey, that's what they asked. Fair enough. So you can do that. Android, they are working on a test beta for it, but that is not yet available. But you can still submit the form and put yourself on the waiting list and get it when it is available. So you can wait or you can get your name on the waiting list already. But yeah, Remote Incident Manager for mobile.
I've wanted this for a long time, actually. So Remote Incident Manager, by the way, for those who don't know, is it one of these remote desktop apps, a little bit like how you might see like TeamViewer and things like that floating around. It's where someone else can remotely log into your computer with your permission, of course, to give like tech support or to help you out with something. I use it all the time. Usually my mum ringing me up because she's broken something or, you know, needs help with something. Family tech support. Or you can use it obviously for your own machine, which I guess in this case is probably what they're going for. Like if you're on the move and you need to just log into your computer at home to get something, which I have wanted for a long time. There is actually, not many people know about this, but there is actually NVDA Remote, which is kind of the NVDA's own version of this. But the difference with that is that both users have to have NVDA installed, whereas Remote Incident Manager, it doesn't matter. So the other person doesn't even have to be running a screen reader. They can just connect and it's all accessible.
It's a bit like Jaws Tandem as well.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
That's the sort of equivalent. And, well, to be honest, I didn't rate Jaws Tandem too much.
I like Jaws Tandem when it works.
Yeah, when it works.
Well, that's,
that's the caveat with these things.
Yeah.
I think it feels like it's been a bit left behind to me. I think that's the thing with Tandem. But, so there is an NVDA app for iOS, NVDA Remote, I should say. But it's a bit, you know, it's a bit complex to set up because I've done it before where I've gone to kind of, I've been on the move. I thought, oh, I just need to grab that file. I go to log in and then I remember, oh, no, I can't. I left Jaws running, not NVDA. Or I've left NVDA running, but I've not left the connection open. I'm going to be signing up for this.
See, I've never thought about it from a perspective of being able to control your device when you're out and about if the connection's open. I've used TeamViewer loads of times at work. You know, if you phone up the tech desk and be like, my laptop's not working, and they have to remote in to figure out what's going on. But it's never occurred to me for for personal use, or that you could actually, like you say, if you established a connection, be able to sort of access your own devices remotely. It's all really interesting. I never thought of anything like that. If I want to be able to access a file on the move, I will just make sure to drop it into something like Google Drive or Dropbox or OneDrive or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I've got the mobile app on my phone, and that's kind of just how I've always done it. But yeah, that'd be cool. It's never even occurred to me.
Microsoft, they use Quick Assist, which is built into Windows. So if you have a problem with your laptop and you have to call Microsoft Disability, they tend to use that. So when I've had to call Microsoft on the very odd occasion I've needed assistance, there was once had some problems with Teams and I couldn't resolve it, so I contacted them and I had Quick Assist loaded, ready to give them the ID number that you have to, or they give me one and I put it in, or I give it to them, whatever. But that's normally the way these things work. So Quick Assist is actually quite good, as is TeamViewer, but I think, Remote Incident Manager is really good because you don't have to have any affiliation to any screen reader or anything. And it'll be really interesting to see how it works out on mobile devices. For instance, could you maybe get some help with your iPhone if there's something that you can't do? If you could actually, log on and do something with somebody at the other end with your phone, would that be feasible?
As in remotely controlling the phone.
Yeah.
I suppose it's possible. It's whether Apple would allow it, isn't it? Well, Android probably. I'd be less surprised if that came to Android.
I think it'd be nice if you could control the same devices signed into your own Apple ID. I don't know if they can do it that
Yeah.
way, where
Yeah.
if the other devices are signed into your Apple ID, you can control them, but maybe not someone else's Apple ID devices, maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe Apple devices under family sharing. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here.
I could be wrong, but can't you do something like that already with like the built-in? I don't think it's accessible, but I'm sure there's something between Mac and iPhone where you can control your
You can
phone if.
do mirror screen mirroring, which I think
Oh, that's it, yeah.
it's more accessible than it was, but still not great.
Don't talk to me about screen mirroring. I nearly smashed up a TV last week because it was trying to get me to type in a code, but I couldn't come out of the code screen to use Seeing AI to take a picture to find out what the code was.
Yes.
And I didn't have another device on me, so I tried taking a photo or doing it with my Meta glasses, and that didn't work. It said because it was fuzzing out the code for some reason. And then I tried even just taking a picture and sending it to the family group chat and saying, can anybody read this? And they couldn't. And I was going absolutely bananas. And then eventually I thought, hang on a minute, I reckon this TV model can talk. So instead I got my phone and I did a video call with my brother and I showed him the screen, TV screen, and we managed to get the TV talking. And that solved all the problems. But it was that classic frustration of I'm so close,
Yeah,
so close,
been there,
but I
done it.
just can't read it. And although the TV has voice assist, I couldn't use voice assist to turn on the voice guide. Oh, I was going bananas.
I had a similar thing with trying to sign into. So, gone way off topic here, haven't we? But I still think it. I
Have
had
to
a
get that
similar
off my
thing.
chest.
Well, I had a similar thing with trying to sign into Netflix. I can't think if it was on my Apple TV or my like Samsung smart TV that we've got. Because you've got the option, you can sign in. You can go to Netflix on your phone and then sign in with a code that you just put in, and then that authenticates your TV. Or you can obviously just do username and password. And I hate typing on those remotes, you know, those QWERTY keyboards that you've got to
Oh,
scroll through.
yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anybody likes it, sighted or
That
not
takes about
sighted.
5 years.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that'll do the code way, that's fine. And then the TV comes up, and it says, enter this code on your phone to sign in. 237, 369. And it just reads it once. So you're like, hang on, what was that? But then you've got to go
Yeah.
back. So then you've got to go back out and go into it again. But then, of course, you get a new code, one shot.
Yeah.
That's all you, yeah.
The years of playing Simon will finally pay off.
Natalie, I may as well go to you next. Apart from nearly smashing TVs up, what's anything we should do this week?
I should say the TV is alive and healthy today.
Oh, good.
No TVs were harmed during the making of this recording.
Exactly. Well, I was going to talk about one thing, which I still will, but Jackie's just reminded me of something when you said about Microsoft's Quick Assist thing. So I was at work trying to troubleshoot a Teams problem for somebody else. And it was kind of one of those ones where I was getting the message third or fourth hand. So it was a bit of guesswork going on as to what might have been the problem. But something that happened live and really confused me and the person I was working with was I was on a Teams call, and one of the complaints that we were trying to work out what the problem was the individual said they couldn't reach the chat function. And I thought, I don't know what the problem is here. Okay, Teams isn't my favourite platform, but I can definitely access the chat function and get back out of it again if I don't want to be in it anymore. But when I went away to try and find Teams keyboard shortcuts to double check stuff, two things I noticed, which is partly why I was doing it in the first place. One was the keyboard shortcut for chat seems to have vanished. So there was one on the website. When I tried to use it, nothing happened. And I had also noticed this on like the mute and video buttons. It will say in brackets, Control-Shift-M, Control-Shift-O. That's gone from chat. So for some reason, the keyboard shortcut seems to be broken there. And the other thing I noticed was when I came back to the window, is the chat function had vanished. And I was really confused. I just had my mute options, my video options, and one or two other options. And I tried all sorts of different things. And what I eventually tried was tabbing around. There's an option called, I think it was Maximize Meeting or Meeting is Minimized. It was something like that. And I clicked that. Now, bearing in mind, at no point had I minimized the meeting, certainly not deliberately. I clicked that. And then suddenly all those other options for chat, raise hands, react appeared. So I think that might be what caused this problem for somebody else. The fact that they might have come off the team meeting to look at their notes or look at the PowerPoint or write something down, and they've come back, Teams has minimized itself, and just maximizing the window on your own screen won't work. You have to click their maximize option. I thought that's really annoying and really worth knowing. But the thing I actually wanted to mention this morning, and I'll do it very briefly, is something called Lucid. I don't know if anybody here has heard of it. It's L-U-C-I-D. And it's something developed by the University of Houston, I think it was, as in Houston, Texas. And it's Lucid Alt, so A-L-T, and Lucid Arc, so it's A-R-C. And the article I read didn't give an awful lot of detail, but basically the gist of it is it's using AI to help address the dropping literacy in Braille amongst visually impaired and blind users. And I thought that was a very interesting concept, because I think there's a couple of things happening here, certainly in the UK and presumably in the US, if they felt the need to develop something like this, is twofold. One, there's a growing sense that you don't need Braille because everything can talk. What's the problem?
No. Yeah.
And secondly, just the randomness of support you get across the country. So you could be in an area or in a school where support is amazing and, you've got all the gadgets and gizmos and you learn all the skills that you need to learn and you're set up brilliantly. Or you could be somewhere where you may or may not get visual impaired support, you may or may not learn Braille, it might be haphazard, all those things. And I thought this tool or program is clearly trying to bridge that gap.
I'm all for anything that can try and bridge that gap a little bit, because I must admit, I fell into that trap of... Because I learned Braille at school, which was quite lucky, really, nowadays. I know it shouldn't be, but it is. And I fell into that trap when I got into sort of college and stuff of just, oh, I'm not going to bother with Braille. Everything speaks. I don't need it.
Shock,
it's slower.
Horror.
I know. Sorry, Jackie. It was only when I got to, say, like, more into university and I was doing programming and networking, and when you're dealing with things like IP addresses, which all, when they're read out at top speed, they all kind of start to sound the same.
Mm.
And code obviously needs to be indented a certain number of lines and things like that, which you can do with speech, but it's a lot harder. That was when I eventually got back into Braille, but now it's, my reading speed is pretty terrible, really.
That's the bit that really worries me the most, is the perception that Braille isn't required anymore, and you just feel like you're having to have this constant debate about whether you should learn Braille, whether you should, you know, have it in your life, and it just feels, you know, why do we have to have this debate at all? You know, if people want to learn it and it's an advantage, of course it is. We know the benefits, but, you know, if you don't learn it, well, then it's your choice. And, you know, I just worry about the perception that Braille is dying and, there's no need for it anymore with all the AI, with all the screen reader abilities that they have now. But I just couldn't imagine what life would be without Braille. So
yeah,
I think it's most worrying when you hear it from people in the sort of, from a better phrase, vision impaired profession. So
yeah,
people who don't get it, I would understand why they think, oh, why do you need that, and you have to explain it to them. That I'm more okay with. But it's when you have people who work in the visual impairment space saying, what's the problem, you can do it on your phone now, I sort of do a deep intake of breath.
You should never recommend one way over the other, really. You need to always make it clear that people have a choice and allow people to try everything and then make an informed decision once they are able to.
The thing is, though, is when it's really young children.
I was going
to
say.
And what I heard is a really good example of, you would never say to a sighted child, we don't need to teach them like the alphabet or how to spell or how to read, because they can just talk to their devices and have it read it out to them. That is exactly what you're doing when you say to a young vision impaired child, you don't need to learn Braille. Now, as you've said, like, you know, Hubert, if they decide in 10, 15 years' time, I don't like this, I want to do it all like on an audio basis, then fire on. That's their choice. But you have given them that choice.
You've had the choice. Yeah. So give us the name of that service again. Lucid, was it?
Yeah, so Lucid Alt and Lucid Arc, they're kind of like a package deal. So it's Lucid and then Alt for ALT and Arc, ARC.
Jackie, I'll come to you next.
Just a quick one from me. Just, I noticed this week CNET are saying that Apple is delaying the release of their smart glasses until possibly late 2027. Primarily because they have, as we've kind of touched on in this discussion, privacy concerns. Some people are concerned that you go out in public and you're videoing on your glasses and people don't know that you're doing that. So the Meta saying that, you know, there is a light on their glasses that tells you that, you know, the camera is recording. But if you're in a really bright area where the sunlight isn't showing up that light, you could have somebody recording you in public and you wouldn't know necessarily. So I think there are concerns about this, and certainly Apple is right on it with that.
I'm not sure it can be done about that, though, to be honest.
No, me neither.
They've got the light indicator. They can't really do much more than that, unless you want your glasses to play audio when you're filming and ruin your videos by going, filming in progress.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing as well, people can be filming on phones. Now, yes, it looks a bit more obvious, granted, but it's still the same thing. Like, people could be filming on phones in public as well as the glasses, so...
Yeah.
There's not much you can do about that concept in general sometimes.
I did wonder this, actually, the legal side of things, you know, could you get into trouble? Because I've actually had it mentioned to me more than one occasion that if I'm having a bad experience, say, for example, just at the weekend there, had a taxi driver drop me off at the wrong place and then drive off, even though I asked them, could you read the numbers on the doors and basically to check I'm at the right place because I didn't think I was. And it was said to me, oh, you should have recorded him. If you'd had your glasses, you could have recorded him. And I was like, but what would that achieve? And also, would that not put me in an awkward position?
Well, it's been a busy week for us, as it always is. Stick with us. It's another Tech Talk.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Imagine this, you're trying to follow your favourite show, or a tutorial, or a breaking news clip, with your eyes completely closed. For millions in the blind and partially sighted community, media consumption is a constant game of filling in the blanks. Today, we are talking to Sean Keane and Omar Munther, the minds behind Athena AD, a platform using advanced AI to bridge that gap and make sure no one misses a visual moment. Omar and Sean, thank you very much both for joining us.
Thank you for inviting us.
How did this come about? What was the kind of moment to make you guys realize, actually, we need to create a tool like Athena AD?
Honestly, it was my idea, and I've kind of been this kind of AI nerd for the past 4 years, and I'd been thinking about video for a long time, even when getting pictures described became such a thing, you know, using things like Be My Eyes. About 4 or 5 months ago, I was vibe coding, and I started messing around with a tool to describe videos, and I got kind of a working prototype going. And I contacted Omar, who's my friend, and he started helping me to build this out. Because one thing you learn from vibe coding is that it's great for making something local, something that you can use yourself. But when you want to take an idea and expand it to, you know, something that hundreds of people can use, you really need someone with coding experience, with development experience, and that's where Omar really helps me out there.
For listeners who might not realize how massive the media accessibility gap is, can you paint us a little picture of, you know, what consuming video content or standard media is like today?
That's really the key thing here, is that I like to say that there's so much video content out there that it's almost like standing at the ocean with a teacup. On YouTube alone, there's trillions of videos. I heard this stat that something like every minute of every day, 500 hours of video content is being uploaded to YouTube. And that's just talking about YouTube. We're not talking about Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and all the other platforms. Plus, you have users who might have a video on their phone from a birthday party or a wedding or some vacation or event. And there's just so much video content out there that us as blind people haven't had access to. And now using AI, we can get access to that kind of material. And I have to say, for me, myself, it's been amazing how much I've learned. I'll share a quick story. A couple of months ago, my son went to a Bruno Mars concert, and it was just astounding how much video content goes on stage during a concert. And there was all these video screens and talking about Bruno and moving around the stage. And I was just blown away by how much I'd missed out on and how much difference that makes in knowing that kind of stuff.
Now, here is a thing. Let's talk about how Athena AD works then, because that's the key part. You know, there's a lot of standard description tools that often just read kind of transcript text aloud. But with this tool, you know, it analyzes the video directly. It doesn't just rely on pre-existing scripts. So can you walk us through how the AI looks at the video and translates visual action into accurate context?
First, I would like to start by saying that the brains of the operation is Gemini. That's the model we're using. And the reason why I picked it is because when compared to models, popular models, top tier models like Claude from Anthropic and GPT from OpenAI, Gemini is the only model that would accept video as input. Now, what does that mean? If I go to ChatGPT and I give it a video, this will not work. I have to extract images from the video, and then I have to extract the audio and send it to Whisper, which is also a model from OpenAI, to get a timed transcript. And then I have to label everything such that at any point in time, ChatGPT or the GPT model understands that any point in timeline X, which is the images, is pointing towards a point Y in the timeline of the transcript. Okay, so it's watching both at the same time. I have to make sure of that. So I have to build the pipeline and manage it. But in Gemini's case, the pipeline is built and managed by Google. All I have to do is just give it the video. So like you said, what Athena AD does is gives Gemini the video itself rather than relying only on an existing transcript. And here the model samples frames throughout the video and considers the visual and audio information together. So that would allow it to recognize actions, people, settings, if someone was making a joke, some kind of gesture and relating it to perhaps a previous scene in order for it to avoid repeating itself. Every time someone does the same thing because they said something at the very beginning, it would understand that this is related to that and therefore there is no need for me to mention it a million times. It's just that one time. So Athena AD turns that understanding into clear descriptions of what a blind or low vision viewer would otherwise miss.
One of the biggest issues with AI today tends to be, you know, hallucination, you know, making things up. So when you are describing a video for a user where missing visual detail is quite important, how is the AI trained or tuned to be completely accurate to the scene without kind of overinterpreting it?
I think that's where prompting comes in for us because, you know, Gemini and AI, like you said, it can hallucinate, it can come up with its own ideas. And that's where the prompting, that's where we spend so much time getting feedback from our users and their testing, and then going back and improving our guardrails, our guidelines to keep the content accurate. It's a constant battle. And I'll let Omar speak on that.
There are a number of things. It's not just the hallucinations. I'll answer your question, which is about hallucinations, but then I will address the whole thing as how do we make sure that it's giving us exactly what we're looking for. So in terms of hallucinations, there are a lot of guidelines that we must give it. Like Sean said, we have to guide it. So that involved me watching a lot of videos, testing a lot of videos over and over again, just to see where it usually does well and where is it that it starts to stray off. And that would let me know, is this a direction that I'm supposed to give it? Or am I supposed to, I mean, sometimes I had to use a better model, a better Gemini model, just to make sure that I got the quality that I wanted. And from there, I saw that, okay, so let me start any job that a user starts must start with that model. And then if for whatever reason it failed, we will fall back to a different Gemini model. One example about guiding it is that I learned, and I still don't understand why that's the case, but I learned that if I don't tell it how long the video is and specifically instruct it to make sure that any description it gives me to any scene in the video does not exceed the duration of the video, there is a decent chance that it's going to give me extra scenes that exceed the duration of the video. So at the end of the day, it's all about experience. The more videos that we watch, the more videos that we will learn from.
Now, when it comes to most audio descriptions, they're quite static. You know, you get one voice, one volume mix. Now, Athena AD features a custom mode. You know, why is giving the user direct control of variables such as narration style, voice gender, and kind of audio video mixing kind of a non-negotiable feature for you guys from day one?
The idea from that came from a friend of mine because his daughter plays volleyball. And he was asking me, he's like, I wonder if there's a way where you could have the AI focus on one person. Because, you know, I'm not interested in hearing about what all the other girls are doing. I want to hear about what, you know, my daughter's doing in the video. And so that kind of gave me the idea to work on some kind of custom mode where we could be specific and give the user the ability to focus on what they want to focus on. And that's always evolving. You know, in the future, there'll probably be like a chat involved with that where you could ask questions, you know, almost like being able to ask questions of an image, you will be able to ask questions of the video as well.
Sean said it all. Now, he mentioned the example of a personal video. We can be talking about a public video, which is available on YouTube, for example, and two people want to watch that same video for completely different reasons. So instead of making the choice on their behalf, we are giving them that opportunity to select what is it that they are looking for. And also what Sean said, we will be introducing a chat feature where as soon as the model is done with the description and produces the video for the user, they will have, I think, 15, maybe 30 minutes at the most to ask the model any question they want about the video, like ask it for more details. We're even going, and this has to do with customization, improving their experience. We will also allow users to include the names of the actors in the video, especially if it's a personal video. And this also is something that helps the model, helps guide the model in identifying people. There is a client, well, a potential client that we hope to sign with sometime in August. And all the videos that they're going to give us are advertisements. And all the actors in those advertisements are public figures. And I started testing it just to see what Google would do, what Gemini would do. Would it recognize these people on its own or not? Many times it would recognize people, but sometimes, especially if there are a lot of people, it would get things mixed up. So when I started telling it, the actors in this video are Sean, Hubert, and Omar, 95% of the time, it would find those three people exactly, and it would correctly identify them.
Let's take a student who he's watching, let's say, a biology lecture. They'll need a different narration style to someone watching an action movie or a fast-paced YouTube vlog. How does the custom mode adapt to different media genres?
The custom mode was originally, like Sean said, it was for personal videos. But when you're talking about an action movie or an advertisement or a lecture or a music video, this becomes less about what the user wants and more about what the video itself has to offer. We will keep that feature, but the prompts that will be used to describe those videos, there will be different prompts for different videos. So in a lecture, the lecturer usually doesn't stop talking. Okay, usually they do not. I mean, they take a break for a second or two, but there is no long pause. Someone's always talking. Or for example, content creators on YouTube, when they're talking about the latest AI model and how is it improving a certain industry, it's always constant information. What we have to do there isn't just to worry about how is it that we're supposed to describe that specific type of video? But also what we have right now, what we will be releasing is that the description will be inside the video. The video will pause, the narrator will speak. In some videos, that might not be what we have to do. We will need to find gaps, silent periods in the video where we will insert the narration. So that also plays a factor.
Let's talk about the launch of this tool and what it will look like. So a few main questions, you know, who'll be able to access it first? And how can our listeners sign up, get involved and use it? What platforms will it be on?
Right now it's web-based. We do have an app for iOS in the works. No official launch on that yet, but anybody with a web browser, either on your phone or on your computer, you can visit www.athina, and that's Athina with an I, athinaad.com. Go ahead and sign up. It's free to use right now. You can upload videos and paste in YouTube links and try it to your heart's content. In the future, in August, we're going to be launching what's called the Creator Plan. The Creator Plan is for creators, for content creators that want to be able to take their own content and have it audio described. They'll be able to upload a video, have it audio described, have it mixed the audio description into that video, and then download it and go use it wherever they want, post it on TikTok or on Facebook. And now they have an audio described video for their blind audience. This is going to be really popular, I think. People have been just asking us over and over for, you know, something like this, because this really is the first of its kind that's available to the public. In the future, we'll have other plans, like a basic plan. We will always have a free plan. Ultimately, depending on the partners we work with, because we have three lanes, three opportunities here. We have the what's called the blind users, people that are blind or low vision that just want to have a tool that they can describe videos with, period. And then we have the creators, people that want to be able to have audio described videos of their own content to use. And then we have enterprise. We have a few partners we're talking to right now. One that Omar mentioned, very, very, very large company. And if that happens, you know, there might be an opportunity down the road to make this free. Unfortunately, we're using a lot of computing power, a lot of GPUs and AI models and things like that, and that does cost money. So we have to pay our suppliers. And but you know, we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to being able to roll out. The sky's the limit. I mean, who knows? Down the road, it'd be great to have a tool that could do this on the fly. You know, but pull up a live video and automatically get the audio description. You know, that's probably a few years down the road for us, but definitely on our timeline.
Well, that sounds really interesting, and I really look forward to trying this myself as well. And it's fantastic to actually see something like that developed as well. So we look forward to not only seeing how this version goes, but also, you know, hopefully getting you back on to talk about future versions of this, because it sounds like an exciting project that has plenty of potential, and I think a lot of things here are still to come. So thank you very much to both of you, Sean Keane and Omar Mantha, for telling us all about Athena AD. And if you do fancy giving this a try, Sean, can you give us the address one more time?
Yes, just open your browser, Safari, Chrome, or you know, on your phone or on your computer. Go to www.athinaad.com. That is athinaad.com. And the most common question is, what does Athena stand for? And it's a thoughtful human inspired narration assistant.
I did not know that's an abbreviation, so that's an extra bit I found out there. Well, there we go. Do let us know also your thoughts if you do end up using this. We would love to hear your thoughts as well. We can easily pass them on to Sean and Omar as well. The usual email address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. For now, though, Sean and Omar, thank you very much.
If you've followed us and listened to us for a while, you've probably heard us talk about Leesy, the product that goes with Jaws. And me and Jackie in particular are big fans of this. We've mentioned it every now and again. We covered it quite extensively last year with their new ChatGPT integration. Well, Leesy version 11.5 is now out. There's a lot of new updates going on. And joining me now is Brian Hartgen from Hartgen Consultancy, the man behind Leesy. Brian, welcome to Tech Talk.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. And can I start by saying how kind you've been to the product, particularly over the last year? It's very, very good of you to give us such glowing comments.
Well, I mean, it's a great product. So if people are maybe a bit new to this, do you want to just give us a bit of an intro before we get into the new stuff, just to Leesy in general and what it is and how it all works?
By all means, yes. So Leesy is a very powerful collection of tools, scripts, and accessible applications designed to make Jaws more productive, more flexible, and more enjoyable to use. And it started actually back in 2014. My wife thought back to the days when she purchased her first computer. I'm sure we all remember those days. And she thought it would be an idea to build a set of tools to help people get started. Well, I actually did that throughout the summer months of 2014. And when it was released, some what you might call JAWS power users thought that they wanted a slice of some of that. They wanted access to some of the tools that was actually in the first Leesy product. So that actually came to be Leesy Advanced. And I would say that the vast majority of people purchasing Leesy from that point had an intermediate or advanced knowledge of using JAWS. So it works with JAWS and Zoom Text Fusion because JAWS is actually built into Fusion. And some very brief examples of existing features that have been around for a long time. We've had easy ways of reproducing large blocks of text, either through a list or by typing abbreviations, bookmarking text passages. Search and lookup tools have been particularly popular, such as to easily search even Google or obtain the weather, look up Amazon or eBay results, through to using ChatGPT, which, as you said, you identified and highlighted last year, and live sports results. So the new release of Leesy actually builds on quite a lot of that, and obviously we can talk more about that. But I hope that gives you an overview, a very brief overview as to the, I would say, 50 or 60 tools that Leesy had until this point.
Yeah, it's difficult to give a brief overview of Leesy, I think, is the challenge. There's that many features. Let's get into some of the newer stuff, and I think we can kind of pick things up as we go through. So Leesy 11.5 has, to say it's a point update, like to say it's within the middle of the 11 life cycle, it's a huge update, isn't it? Do you want to just get into some of what's new, what some of the new features are?
I'd love to, yes. It is a huge update. It's surprising. And we had, as a group, the beta testers and I, had a lot more ideas. And there comes a point, Callum, when you have to say, look, we just have to stop. We'd love to carry on. But if we don't stop now, then people just won't get it. So the new release of Leesy, as you say, it's 11.5, and it contains 20 new dedicated applications to modernize a lot of the older features that we've had for some time and to give people more functionality. Now, I'll just give you, again, a brief overview. So they range from very simple things, one of which is an alternative to File Explorer within Windows. A lot of people, I don't know if you've heard this, but a lot of people feel that File Explorer is getting a little bit unreliable,
yes,
a little bit unresponsive.
It is, yeah.
And a little bit unpredictable. People are saying that often it will say things like working on it, and it's all getting a bit running like a dog, to be honest. So we've got what we call the Leesy File Manager, which hopefully is a lot more responsive. And I wouldn't say it's a complete replacement for File Explorer in Windows. There are one or two areas that I haven't been able to manage. But by and large, you're able to do most things that you would want to be able to do. And it even incorporates some of the features that File Explorer has in relation to JAWS. So, for example, you can use Picture Smart and OCR and those kinds of things on particular documents. If I were to highlight the things that I think people are most excited about, they would be Leesy Media Center, which kind of incorporates working with audio playlists, listening to radio stations and podcasts, of course, together with one or two other things. It's an audio one-stop shop for things that you might need. Leesy Social, which works with Mastodon and also Blue Sky. And Leesy Word, which is a word processor. There are lots of other things that people are interested in, but if I were to pick three, those would be it. So I can go into any of those if you'd like.
Yeah, well, I think Leesy Word is an interesting one because there's a lot of word processors out there. I mean, yes, you know, Microsoft Word and OpenOffice and all those kind of products are really accessible, but where does Leesy Word fit in, I guess?
Well, it fits in, first of all, because it was designed with JAWS in mind. And when you design an application and you say it's designed with accessibility in mind, building an application with accessible controls is one thing, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's built with a particular screen reader in mind, because even with the most accessible applications in the world, there are things maybe that JAWS would say that you don't want it to say. And particularly with Braille. Braille output is something that I've been very conscious about when building these applications, because you'll probably know from your work with this podcast that there are a lot of apps coming on stream now. A lot of people are developing apps due to vibe coding, if people have heard of that. It's actually relatively easy to create an app now. But what a lot of people forget about completely is Braille. What happens with that? It gets ignored. So, for example, if you're in an application other than the one that we're about to talk about, Lisi Word, let's say that an application sends a message to the screen reader, and it's a global message that you need to take care of and react to. What happens in with most of these apps is that speech is sent to the screen reader, but no Braille at all. So if you're reliant on Braille, what do you do? So with all of the Lisi apps, equal attention has been paid to Braille, and I guess that's one of its strengths. So let's get to Lisi Word. Well, it is exactly what it says. At the heart of it is a word processor, so it can do all the word processing kind of things, like basic formatting. It can do spell checking, text alignment, find and replace, bookmarking, all those sorts of things. It can save as Word documents. It can open Word documents as well. Yeah, all of those sorts of things it can do, but there are additional tools in there too, such as working with PDF files. Now, we all know that working with PDF files can be a bit of a bind because authors do not create completely accessible PDF files because they really don't know what they're doing with them. So when you open a PDF file in Lisi Word, what it actually does is it does it very quickly, but it analyzes the PDF page by page. So analyzing a document as a whole, I don't think is good enough. What you have to do is analyze it page by page, because what page one might be completely accessible, but you might have a horror of a table on page 39. So we have to do it that way and present it in the best way that we possibly can. Now, even with the knowledge and the tools that I've got at my disposal, I can't always produce a 100% accessible PDF. So we have two other ways of being able to deal with that. The first is that we actually can send the PDF to a service that we have paid for a commercial license for an API for. And put simply, what that means is it will send the document off to the PDF analysis service, and it has rules in there which make sure that the document is as accessible as it can be, and it will bring it back to you. Now, if that fails, and sometimes it can, then we can send it off to ChatGPT instead. And that's particularly advantageous if you are trying to work with a scanned image of a PDF. So that is a really good one. And I often find as well that some people produce Microsoft Word documents using text boxes, which are inaccessible to JAWS anyway by default. And Lisi Word can deal with those things as well. The other things that make Lisi Word stand out, I would say, is its interaction with ChatGPT. So You can, for example, ask it questions about your document as you write it, if you want to. We have a series of pre-prepared prompts, so you can get the text summarized in a particular way, or you can have it redrafted using a specific format, has a spelling and grammar in there as well, all of which is completely accessible, of course. So there's a lot going for Lisi Word. I think I'm really proud of that particular feature. There are more things to come with it, certainly, but I think we're hitting the ground running with that one.
Oh, absolutely. I'm excited about it.
Oh, good.
It's funny, isn't it, that there's all these different apps out there. I mean, like I said, for word processing, there's an endless list of word processing apps that you can get. But there really is something to be said. There's a big difference in the between accessible versus designed to be accessible, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah, it seems like such a basic, it feels like such a basic thing that we're still kind of struggling with.
It is in many ways. And I think the thing as well is that when you design an application like a word processor, if I can say so, what you don't want to be doing is bombarding people with a whole raft of options that they might not need. So at the moment, what we've tried to do as a group, the beta testers and I, is not to give you everything with these applications, but to give you an idea as to what we can do as a group and to give you a little bit of everything, if you like. And we can always build on these tools later.
You mentioned it works with Word documents and PDFs and things like that. So if somebody sends me just a standard Word document, does that mean I could still pull that up in Lisi Word and work with it, or at least read it in that fully accessible environment?
You can work with it, and you can also save it back to Lisi Word format as well if you want to do that.
Okay. And that is another important thing, isn't it? When you're using these, say, in the workplace and things like that, wherever possible, they've got to try and tie into the mainstream tools to some degree.
Yes, I mean, there are things definitely that it can't do.
Yeah.
So, for example, I've already talked about bold italics and underline, changing formatting, text alignment. It can do all that. What we can't do is tables at the moment. Okay, so if a Word document has tables, yes, we'll give you the text of those tables, but not quite in the way that you would experience with the very robust formatting and alerts that you would get when you are browsing a Word table inside Microsoft Word with JAWS, because it's very, very good. You get the coordinates being announced and so on.
I suppose you can't, I wouldn't say can't have everything, because I'm sure you're working on stuff, but, you know, like you said, as long as it gives you enough to do what you need to do, you know, most of the time, I suppose that is better than what we've got currently in some ways.
Yes, and the other thing as well is that you can get your documents backed up as well to a storage location of your choosing. So, for example, your data can be synchronized with all the apps, actually, to a cloud storage service like Dropbox, so that if you need to reinstall Lisi at any time, you're still going to be able to get access to your data, your individual preferences, how often the documents get backed up, and so on. Now, obviously, you don't need to save the documents to those locations. That's just where the data is held. But I've often seen with various applications, people have lost their individual settings and so on. So that shouldn't happen, providing you know where the original data was located.
Yeah, yeah, fantastic. So you mentioned Lisi Media Center is another one that people seem to be excited about. Do you want to tell us a bit about that one?
Yes, so it incorporates a number of different features that we've had for years, since version one, actually. One of which is a radio directory. So you can, in fact, it's three radio directories rolled into one. So we have our own radio directory of online radio stations that you can browse through, divided into 10 categories. We've always had that, and people have suggested radio stations to add to that over the years. And in fact, you can submit ones for consideration if you want. We browse the radio browser directory, which has 60,000 online stations. It's a bit like the Wikipedia of radio stations. That's the best way I can describe it. And we also can access radio stations on the Shoutcast platform in their directory. So there's three stations there, but you don't need to think about where each station is coming from, because you can carry out a search and it searches through all of the directories in one go. Who cares where it's coming from as long as we can hear it? So that's the radio element, but you can add stations to favorites. You can create presets so that you can listen to stations in whichever application you like. You have what we call the Leesy Media Player. Now, this is a brand new media player which is capable of not only playing audio files, but also things like tagging files correctly. There's an audio conversion utility in there, so you can convert from one format to another. You can create playlists of files using that, and so on. Now, as far as the radio directory is concerned, we give you a choice of players, as we always have. So if you really don't like the Leesy Media Player, and I don't see why you wouldn't, because I'm particularly fussy about audio, let's say, and I have thought that this audio player is one of the best that I've heard. But if you prefer something like VLC or Winamp even, or a Foobar, you can have those. So that's the radio element. There is podcasts as well, which gives you the ability to search for podcasts in the iTunes directory, as again, we've always done. But there are a number of things in there.
And on next week's show, Brian will be showing me how that podcast feature actually works and much more. So tune in next week for that.
Well, last week, Hubert spoke to David, who is CEO of Mavis Glasses. In this week's chat, Hubert has been talking to Carl, who is a smart glasses user of the Mavis product, and he is going to discuss his experiences.
You've been using these glasses, and we'll chat to you about that. But first of all, can you tell us a little bit about your level of vision that you have, so we get to know about you a bit better?
I have a serious degenerative condition of the optic nerve, so I don't have an awful lot of vision. I can see colours and shapes, so I can't see my hand in front of my face, for example. I can't read any text other than routes that I've walked consistently. When I'm trying anything new, the help of smart glasses is invaluable, and any assistive technology, in fact.
How do you feel about smart glasses? You know, to some people, it's a fairly new bit of technology. Some people still aren't sure about it. You know, how do you feel about wearable technology like that?
I think it's very exciting. I think it's great to have new possibilities, having new worlds opened up by assistive technology. I think one of the issues, when I lost my sight, I wasn't sure how I'd be able to cope. And for anyone who's just lost their sight, those first few tentative steps into a new world can be very difficult. And I think having the option of using smart glasses, it is essentially an extension of your eyes and being able to sort of utilise all those features.
How have you come to discover the smart glasses from Mavis? Can you tell me a little bit about how that came about and how you got involved?
We have mutual connections, and I'm involved in the local community. I did a fundraising campaign for Northamptonshire Association for the Blind, where I walked 10 million steps. And I think my association with Northamptonshire Association for the Blind and other networking companies enabled us to touch base a few months ago, and for me to start working with David and experience the glasses.
So talking about kind of your experiences of these glasses, when you took them out of the box for the first time, put them on, what was it like?
I think the big difference between those and other smart glasses I use was the fact that they are tailored specifically for visually impaired. Other smart glasses are a leisure product, and they happen to be beneficial for visually impaired people rather than having that as their sole function. I did notice that some of the features were really enhanced compared with the other smart glasses. The reading function, for example, is vastly superior. Obstacle detection, I hadn't experienced before, so that was going to be really useful when exploring new environments.
How did you find obstacle detection when you were using it? You know, what have been your experiences of that feature?
It's very useful. There's always that hesitancy when I'm about to explore a new street or a new environment. It doesn't stop me, but there's always that heart racing and that apprehension. But with the obstacle detection, you know that you're not going to bump into anything, and you can make those minor adjustments, a little vibration or bleep on the side where the obstacle is, enables you to move to one side. And as they're customizable, you can change the parameters for distance from the left or right or in front.
How easy do you find like changing the parameters you've mentioned, changing different options and operating the glasses? How easy is that for you?
It's becoming easier. There is an online portal, and using VoiceOver on my iPhone enables me to access the portal and do those changes. As with anything, there's a learning curve, but once you're used to it, everything becomes intuitive. I wouldn't say it's a barrier to adoption. Anyone, you don't need to be massively techie to take on board these glasses and start using them.
So we've talked about obstacle detection, and we've talked about, you know, reading text and scene descriptions. What are some of the other features you also find yourself using on these glasses?
Scene description. So going into a shop, first of all, identifying your environment's really important to make sure you're in the right place. So if you're in an unfamiliar environment and you want to know, someone has given you directions in an email perhaps, and they say enter via the blue door, and there is a sign on the right that says XYZ, you can double check your environment by first of all activating scene description and then asking supplementary questions. Is this the entrance? Is this a blue door? I'm not saying that you can't pick up the phone and ring the person you're heading for, but this gives you that extra level of independence. And as someone who is seriously visually impaired, that's one of the most important things to me is to maintain my independence.
When it comes to, you know, your experience of the glasses, you've been using them for a bit now. Are they slowly becoming kind of a regular part of your kind of daily activities?
Oh, absolutely. I use them extensively in the home to read correspondence. When I'm out exploring, I will activate scene description, obstacle detection. And shopping is a major boon. Just being able to pick a can up in the shop, find out what the product is, rather than playing super roulette or something like that, you actually got some certainty about what you're buying in the store.
What else would you like to see on the glasses that maybe either isn't there at the moment or isn't working, or you'd like to work better? You know, what would you like to see in the future of these glasses? Because they sound amazing so far, but what would you like to see added?
Integration with bus timetables or train timetables might be something for the future. Maybe the integration of some of the leisure functions from other glasses. But for me, the most important thing is to have that independence of navigation and reading text and recognition.
How do you find making phone calls using the glasses? How easy is that for you to do?
It's becoming easier and easier, just advancing the number of contacts you've got in the portal. And it grows with you. It's like adding new contacts to your mobile phone. As with any new product, you're not going to jump into it straight away and become fully conversant with it. But it's worth sticking with because the added independence and the reduction of that cognitive overload is really important as well.
How do you access the portal? Do you access it via an app or a browser?
It's via a browser. Because the glasses are essentially self-contained, they're not connected to a mobile phone. It's just a browser link to go and access the portal and the login.
What would you say to other people who may be thinking of trying them?
Absolutely give them a go. They're increasingly becoming more valuable to me. It's like having an assistant who you can use for more hours per week.
And that is it for another week. Thank you so much, as always, for being with us. And if you want to get in contact, if there's any comments or feedback or anything we could help you out with, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is that all important email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Ta-ra. See you next week.